And welcome to another episode of the Bakari Sellers Podcast. Today we have somebody who I feel like I've known my entire life, from Comic View to everything that we love, none other than Cedric the Entertainer. How you feeling today, man?
What's up, my brother? Good, man. All is well, man.
Yeah, you've been playing any golf lately? Every time I see you online, it look like you're at a golf tournament or something.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of tournaments mainly. I actually held mine a couple weeks ago in Cabo. Everybody came down. It was fun. And then I played at Derek Fisher's and DJ Khaled's. I've been all around Anthony Anderson's. So I've been, and then I played a couple of times on my own, just trying to get the game a little bit better, man. But it's golf.
Yeah, I'm Tiger in the woods, so I get you.
Yeah, that's where they find you. I try to raise money when I'm at your just to for me losing so many golf balls.
Well, look, we usually have we start our show by having our guests walk us through the arc of their careers, but we know about your career and we know you and you're a friend of the show. But before we get into our book, and we'll talk about your new book project and your barbecue project.
Yeah, man.
Let's talk about your perspective on the writer and actor strike right now, and break it down for folks if you can. Is there an end in sight?
You know, it's really tough because there's a lot of things really about the transparency of our business that's really the issue right now, and it's been, you know, mainly kind of came from the streaming side. You know, once companies like Netflix and Amazon, who were considered technology companies and not broadcast companies, started to grow, they were able to kind of create a model that they didn't have to reveal certain numbers. And, you know, because of that, you know, the model in which they pay people changed. And so the more institutional organizations love that model. They don't have to pay residuals. And so basically is one of the reasons why everybody got streamers. So, you know, there's Disney Plus for Disney. There's Paramount Plus for CBS. There's, you know, all of these companies, you know, Peacock. Everybody got a company to be able to do this model where I can pay you one time and then you're done, you know. And so it's just one of these businesses where we got to figure out that number. I think everybody knows, I said that entertainment is our greatest commodity, one of our biggest exports as a country. We sell more movies and television to other countries than anybody else in the world. And we can't afford to like just act like this is not a business that we can give up. So, you know, we're going to have some kind of come to Jesus meeting coming up soon.
Man, I heard they wanted to use y'all in CGI or AI one time and then never pay you again.
Yeah, again, the AI thing is another thing where, again, they could take not only your image, but also your kind of creative brain. You know, anybody that use ChatGPT, you know, you can write a whole script or joke as Cedric the Entertainer. Just put it in and it'll have nuances of the way I say things and the way I kind of flow. And if it practices it enough, then by the time you get to the six or seventh time, you wouldn't need me at all to write a script. You could just kind of get a version and then tighten it up. So now think about not having to have a writer's room. I don't have to pay insurance. I don't have to do these things. I can allow the computer to do these things. And so it's appealing on one side of the business, but it's not as for the human beings that really kind of like give up their IP, they give up their ideas to you. And then you just basically take this single idea and run off with it. That's kind of like, that's what makes it unfair, man.
Yeah, I hear you. Let's talk about this new book, which is the reason you're here, called Flipping Box Cars. Talk about your inspiration for the book. There he is.
Yeah, you know, this inspiration came from my grandfather, man. My grandfather passed before I was born. My mother's father, she would tell me stories about him. And, you know, like in our families, man, these characters become mythical. They become, you know, you hear the story and you like start to imagine what it was like. And I would often just fantasize or have these machinations about who he was and what he said and how he walked. And I basically created a whole fictional world around that and decided to write a story about it. And so it's, you know, it's amazing because it takes a little bit of his real life and stories that I knew. And then I just created this really, you know, kind of really detailed world all around it. And it was a wonderful, great experience. You know, to kind of bring somebody that I'm related to, that I have a relationship with in this weird way, to life. And now he's real.
Why this kind of book, though? I mean, you mentioned it. It's a novel and it's fiction. Yeah. But I'm sure you could have written a lot of different books. The origin of comedy, you know, yeah, what it means to be Black in Hollywood, the true story of Cedric the Entertainer. Why this type of book?
You know, it was interesting, man, that, you know, my kids, I was just thinking about like our kind of connection to our history. And it's interesting that, you know, I grew up and I was saying I probably knew 20, 30 of my cousins like close. Right. And but my kids, they probably know 6 to 4.
Oh, yeah.
They kind of, and I was like, man, we've gotten generationally so far from who we are, and that somehow my grandfather is me. Like, but, you know, I never got to meet him, but the things that he wanted to be, the guy, the dreams he had, the guy, the fact that he wanted to be outside the box and an entrepreneur, and he was always, you know, working for the community and trying to figure out how to make things better for his family and in the world around him. And I was like, yo, 2 generations later, I actually got to live that. He was a man in the 40s, Black man in the southern city in the 40s. You know, having to deal with all of the social constructs on top of him. And yet here was 2 generations later and his grandson is literally doing all these things. Like I'm free to do whatever it is that I can create. And so that is a blessing and one that I thought was an interesting connection. And I wanted to be able to tell that story and then motivate more people to go back and really like understand where they from and how they build and how you can actually go forward and dream a bigger dream, you know? Mm.
This episode is brought to you by Thomas's.
Thomas's presents Pondering the Bagel with Tom.
Oh, the paradox of the bagel. 'Tis crunchy yet soft. 'Tis filling yet has a hole. 'Tis a vehicle for spreads, but only travels from toaster to plate. Thomas's, huzzah, a toast to breakfast.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
So who's your intended audience for this book and what do you want readers to really get out of it?
You know, I think, you know, my intended audience is people who love like a good crime caper. It's a love story. I just really like, I love those kind of fictional tales. I'm a big fan of the Walter Mosley books and James McBride. So any of those kind of books that tell the story of our culture and who we are, and you can see the characters really real. You can visualize them. You understand that the stories he's telling about people that you can just kind of subconsciously see and know exactly who they are. And that's what I wanted that story to be, really that kind of, and it's definitely, even though it's about my grandfather, it's more of an homage to my grandmother, who was, again, that glue that kept our whole family together and allowed me to tell this story because, you know, Papa was like, he was a dude living it, you know?
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I find amazing about this book, and I was flipping through, I got an early copy, was reading it, and it's creative as hell. Like, I don't know if you were high or what, but what was your creative process like for this book? I mean, how did you write this book? And what did you learn by yourself about yourself in writing this type of fictional book?
You know, the main thing is that I kind of started out creating what I do mainly is producing television. So I've been producing TV for the last, 15, 20 years. And so I wanted to create a TV show when I first started it. And so the opportunity to get to do it as a novel, as a book, it made me think about it in a more long form. And I can really like take my time. So I thought about it pretty episodically. And so but what I had to learn is also, you know, like really kind of going into my family in the world and digging into the time period and trying to get an understanding of like really what was happening there. And so That was great, man. It was great to kind of learn a little bit more about my grandfather, who he was and why he was. And I think those are the things that I found out that I kind of do parallel, that just that entrepreneurial spirit, the fact that, you know, he loved a good suit. He loved to dress up and be sly, you know, sharp. He always loved to have a nice watch on. You know, he had these cool little sayings, suit don't make the man, but it makes the difference, you know, like these little things, you know. So I love that. I love that kind of thing. And that's what I really, you know, embrace upon as I got into the book a little bit more in the writing aspect of it.
You know, one of the things that I wanted to ask you is somewhat of a personal question, because I know the group over there that you're working with, shout out to Tara and shout out to Patrick Bass and everybody else over there that helps create and give Black authors a great platform. Yeah, but man, people know you as an actor and they know you as a comedian. So how have people received you as an author?
You know, I've been pleasantly surprised, because I do think people, when they do get a snippet of the book, they find like it does have my kind of tonality, my storytelling. So if you like movies like Barbershop, or you see me in these, you know, playing these characters that you can like, oh, okay, I identify with that. You can tell I write the book from that POV. I don't do a lot of jokes. There's some funny things in here, you know, things that I was like, oh, you got to keep that. That's like a little funny line. But I didn't write it to be like Cedric the Jokester. I wanted to tell this other story. And I think that was also, you know, part of the motivation is to get people to understand that, you know, I think about like, you know, great people, Gordon Parks, like folks that go back to the Renaissance men. They just did everything. They shoot pictures. They write books, they grow farm, they have farms, you know. People just are, you know, and none of us are really monolithic human beings. So a lot of times, you know, you can fight that being put into a box. And that was one of the real reasons why I love the opportunity to be able to do this as a novel when it came across, because I did want to do something that felt like it was a stretch. It was something odd. It was something different. And my audience could grow with me and I can grow with them. And so it's not this easy, digestible thing. It's like, oh, Sid, you know, he put some Bernays on that. Okay.
Oh, okay.
He's soupy. Okay. That's different. That wasn't regular fried in batter.
They go be like, this nigga can write. Oh, my goodness. that's going to be the overarching theme from this. No. But I mean, like, so is this just the first iteration? Do you have more on the way? And the most important question that I got to go ahead and get out somewhere in the middle of this interview is, when will the book be available and how can people purchase it?
The book is on sale September 12th. That's tomorrow. Everywhere books are sold. You can grab it. Of course, the audio book's out. I did the audio, so I'm the...
You read the book?
I read the book. That was another great experience. You know, of course, like you write something and then you sit back and you get to read your own work. And I was like, you know what? This is pretty decent. Oh, this is good. I was like, I had to give myself some credit.
I thought reading your own book was one of the most difficult things I'd ever done, because you write words that you never truly enunciate, and I felt like I couldn't read in it sometimes.
That happened for sure. I was saying that. I said, if somebody saw me like saying some of these words, they'd be like, no, you ain't write that. I was like, no, you're writing it, it just come out. But, you know, yeah, I never really had to say unequivocally, categorically, you know, like all together.
Is there going to be a Flipping Box Cars Part 2?
You know, we love the idea of this. I wrote the book. If you know, when people get it, it has a couple of cliffhangers in there.
Yeah, it's not a bow. It's not a bow. I got some questions.
I definitely want people to be intrigued by the character and his world and his life. And, you know, of course, you know, in great success, we'll have the opportunity to come back and finish telling the tale.
That great success, people, means you got to buy the book. It's very
important. Yeah, folks, go out tomorrow and get that book. Wherever books are sold, man, HarperCollins.com, Amazon.com, Amazon.com, bookstores, go out, get the audio book, get it, you know, and support your boy. It's a great, great fun read. You'll love it.
Man, Amistad got some of the best authors on earth. They got me, Cedric, Zora Neale Hurston, and then in the second tier, Steve Harvey. But that's okay.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
I can't not talk about this while I got you. Your new venture with Anthony Anderson. Shout out to Anthony Anderson, AC Barbecue, and your new show, Kings of Barbecue. I didn't know this was a passion of yours or Anthony. So talk about how you two connected on this and what are all of you doing together?
Yeah, man. So we really wanted to start a business together. Anthony and I have been friends well over close to 30 years. We go on these golf trips together where we rent a house. It's me, Anthony, it's a clique of us. Don Cheadle, George Lopez, D.L. Hewley, Chris Spencer. We all kind of hang out. And in these groups, man, we often do the cooking. Anthony and I, we rent a house and we hook, cook, and hang out. And so from that idea, everybody was doing tequila companies or liquor companies, brands. And we were like, what can we do that feels like authentic to who we were? And the idea of barbecuing and grilling, and it just was a universal idea. One, it's so celebratory. It's so about our community. It's something so rooted deep in our community, this idea of family getting together, having a queue. So that's when we started developing this idea. So AC Barbecue came from that. We got together. We did all the right things. The show basically kind of walks you through how we decided to create the brand, how we put the flavor profiles together. And then, we launched our deal at Walmart, and it was all, very special. So we're in Walmarts right now. We got deals going at Lowe's and Home Depot. We're developing the tools. So we got like spatulas and tongs coming out and cutting boards. And then I actually also in a conversation about doing a couple of restaurants around. So we're trying to really grow this brand to a national brand that is a celebration of the world of barbecue. We feature more grill masters and pit kings than we grill on the show. We cook, but we cook more like for us and for fun. But we love people that really do this, and we start to put the spotlight on them. And that's what our brand is about more than anything. Just a national shine on those who like to get out and grill, man.
One of the things I appreciate about this collaboration is I feel like the story of barbecue is being told often has white faces.
Yeah.
For many of us from the South and parts of the Midwest, like St. Louis and Kansas City, the face of barbecue is a black man, right?
Yeah, exactly.
How much of this project is about reclaiming the narrative of blacks in the kitchen and blacks in barbecue?
Man, it was one of the big, big things that we wanted to do. Matter of fact, we went to Memphis, we got a barbecue historian, Howard Conyer, who came out and really kind of gave us a story. And we talk about that. We talk about how that was one of the things that from slavery, the opportunity of being able to take the scraps and then, you know, throw it on the grill and make a meal. And then for somebody to show up with, if I got the meat, you come over with the potato salad, you bring the slaw, and now we got a whole potluck meal here, right? And that is that, that's culturally our, the way we celebrate, and then basically how queuing just kind of started to spread. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we definitely feel like that is authentically, you know, belongs to the culture. And that, you know, we feel like it needs to be a national brand that says that. And that's what we're working hard to really prove, that we are in that space of barbecue, and that's what it's all about. And we should have the national brand that says this is what barbecue is about.
Well, look, I think if anybody can carry it, you and Anthony Anderson can carry that. I don't know about it. Anthony don't look like he eat barbecue no more. That man done lost all the weight.
Yeah, he got all super slim. he just had a sauce.
Sauce on some salad. Yeah. What type of barbecue is that?
He'll be out there going hard. He be gristly. That boy go hard on that barbecue.
So look, how can people watch the show you're doing on A&E, and how can they support the new brand?
Yeah, man. So, you know, we're in the middle of this strike, so I'm not supposed to really shout out them at all. But, you know, it's on A&E Saturdays, man. Go check it out, or you can see it on Hulu. But go to AC Barbecue. Go to our IG, AC Barbecue. On there, you can actually order merch. You can order the product. So at acbarbecue.com, you can get the rubs going to your homes. Right now, we got the rubs, and we got the sauces will be coming soon. But the rubs, we got a 3-pack rub that you can go get and put them on everything. Shoot a video. Let us know how you love it. And we're going to post it, man. That's what it's all about, that whole social spreading of what people are doing. And, you know, folks are making fun recipes, and we having a good time posting them up, man.
I love that. I guess the last question I'll ask you today is, are there any new projects that you can tell me about? One time I got in trouble asking somebody about a project. They told me about it. We had to cut it out the show. And how can people follow you and everything else you're doing on social media?
Yeah, man. So I definitely want people to go out, grab the new book, man, Flipping Boxcars. This is amazing. Make sure you grab that for sure. And then you know, follow me on IG at Said The Entertainer, blue check. You'll see that. And then my website, I Am Cedric, got everything on there across the board. You can just kind of figure it out. I'm on, you know, I'm on X and TikTok and all those things. But that's it, man. And then, of course, like I said, go to AC Barbecue and get some of their support, that project as well, man.
Well, I'm going to lift up this book, man. I'm going to lift you up in prayer. I want this to be a success. I need this to be a New York Times bestseller so we can do it again. But yeah. Cedric the Entertainer, thank you for joining the Bakari Sellers podcast, my brother.
Bakari, thank you, brother, always, man. So legit. Okay.